What's going on, God? I feel like everything is falling apart. It wasn't the first time I'd had this conversation with God, but it was certainly about to become the loudest. It was the summer between my first 2 years of college, and I was working at church camp. I'd made my way up a secret trail only a few of us knew about, to the top of a mountain, overlooking miles and miles around. This is where I would go when I needed to reflect or pray or just get away from everything. But this day, the hike there was a little bit different. It wasn't the usual hike of content freedom, of getting away from all the hustle and bustle and busyness of my job. No, this day the hike was one of very angry steps, each one harder and faster than the last, as I made my way up that trail almost out of breath. For in recent weeks, for oh so many reasons, it felt like the world was conspiring against me. I had reached my emotional and spiritual breaking point. Never had I felt like this before. Maybe I'd had those feelings, but never had I felt them this intensely. I felt like God had abandoned me. No, that's too passive. I felt like God was coming after me with some kind of vengeance. And so when I arrived at the top of that mountain, I couldn't hold it in any longer. And instead of my usual silent prayer or Bible study, I actually started speaking out loud. I would say with God, but it was more of at God. What is going on, God? I feel like everything's falling apart. And it seemed as I said it out loud, it became even more real, and it started to sink in how angry I really was. And so the volume and the intensity began to rise. And within minutes, I swear to you, the birds 2 mountains away started flying out of the trees. I'd had it. I was done. I presented my case to God like it was closing arguments in a life or death trial. And then I found myself actually demanding that God respond. Immediately. Screaming at the top of my lungs to the point of losing my voice, I delivered God an ultimatum that was as, well, sacrilegious as they come. Show me a sign. Show up right now. Fix this or we're done. My words echoed across that valley. And as they echoed back to me and the sound faded, I stood there amidst the silence. And that is all that came. Today we visit a tougher place. Today we visit a tougher place on our journey through the Psalms. The Psalms are often so sing-songy, happy praise scriptures, right? We hear some beautiful things in there. How majestic is your name. Your steadfast love endures forever. This is the day you've made. I'll rejoice and be glad in it. There are some beautiful, joyful, hope-filled words that are wonderful for so many occasions in life. In the words of the Psalms, we find praise. We find trust based on the history of God's relationship with God's people. But the Psalms are also a vehicle of lament. Lament is a pretty heavy word. I mean, it's how we describe a passionate expression of grief and sorrow. It's just not feeling sorrow. It's not just feeling grief. It's how we passionately express it. The Psalms contain many, many laments. They visit places of pain, places of difficulty, feelings of insecurity. They name this. They put it out there. And they've been used in worship by God's people to fill the sacred space with those feelings. I think this is an interesting thing, but the Psalms, though they carry these lament, they all come around by the end, and the final verses of every one of those Psalms return to a place of praise. Now, this is a healthy model of dealing with negative emotions. Express and acknowledge them as a means of moving through them to get to someplace better. Psalm 22 is a good example. It opens up, my God, why have you left me here all alone? Why are you so far from saving me? Why don't you hear my anguished groans? I cry out during the day and you don't answer. At night, I don't even stop my prayers. This psalm gets more and more intense from there. By the middle of the psalm, the author is ready for death to take them away, because that would be better than life. But then, the psalm makes a turn. Without giving a specific reason, suddenly the words change. But you, O Lord, are not far away. You are my strength. Come and help me. Indeed, all the earth's powerful will worship you. All who descend to the dust and kneel before you will be given life. All future descendants of this world will serve you, O Lord. Generations to come will be told about your righteousness. I will proclaim your greatness to those yet unborn, telling them of the great things you have done. That's a pretty big turn. From my God, why have you forsaken me, to I'm going to tell everybody how great you are. It's a really big turn. The Psalms visit this deep human suffering and pain, and then they come back to praise over and over again. All of the Psalms of lament make this turn. Well, all except one. There's 150 psalms. 67 of them are laments, these passionate expressions of grief and pain and sorrow. 67 of them carry that deep human emotion, and 66 of those turn to praise by the end. But not Psalm 88. Not Psalm 88. And I believe that's a very important thing to know. Because there are moments in our lives when we are not ready, or we don't even feel we can think about making a turn to joy or praise. I've sat in that hospital room. I have visited that home. I have taken that phone call, and I have spoken at that graveside. When we're not ready for anything other than the pain. More personally, I've stood on that mountaintop. I've been left with questions that have no answers, and I have cried myself to sleep. In all of our lives, there have been, there are, and there will be moments when we can do nothing but cry out. And in those moments, we can't even envision that our praise would ever return to our hearts and mouths. Because all we know is the hurt. I know so many people who have walked away from their faith, not just in those moments, but because of those moments. When you feel that, feeling that angry, feeling that abandoned, feeling sometimes just nothing, we question those feelings. And it needs to be said that those feelings are not wrong. Those feelings are not unfaithful. That kind of anger and despair and doubt and questioning, those are not only human, they are biblical. It's part of how we can feel. I want you to hear the anguish of the psalmist as shared in Psalm 88. By day I cry out, even at night before you, O Lord. Let my prayer reach you. Turn your ear to my cry, because my whole being is filled with distress. My life is at the very brink of hell. I'm considered as one who might just be plummeting into a pit. I'm like those who are beyond help, drifting among the dead. I feel as if I'm lying in a grave like those who are already dead, because you don't remember me anymore. I feel as if I'm cut off from you. You've placed me in this deep, dark pit. Your anger is smothering me. You're subduing me with it, wave after wave. You've made my friends distant. You've made me disgusting to the world. I can't escape. I'm trapped. My eyes are tired of looking at suffering. I've been calling out to you every day, Lord. I've had my hands outstretched. Do you work wonders for the dead? Do ghosts rise up and give you thanks? Is your faithful love proclaimed by those who feel as if they were dead? Could your wonders be known in a land of darkness, your righteousness in a land of oblivion? But I cry out to you, Lord. My prayer meets you first thing in the morning. Why do you reject me? Since I was young, I've been afflicted. I've been dying. I've endured terror. I am lifeless. Your fiery anger has overwhelmed me. Your terrors have destroyed me. They surround me all day long like water and engulf me completely. My loved ones are distant companions. My only friend is darkness. That's where it stops. My only friend is darkness. This psalm doesn't get anywhere near resolution, let alone praise. And I tell you, I wish I would have known about this psalm when I was standing on that mountaintop yelling at God. Because the only Bible stories that came to my mind were the ones where God shows up. The ones where God answers people. The one where the beam of light and the voice of God descends like a dove. But that's not what I was getting. It's not what I felt. It wasn't what I knew. The only stories that came to my mind were something, anything, would bring resolution to the story and would bring this happy ending where everyone just praised God. I knew those stories, but it certainly wasn't my experience. Where was my peace in the storm? Where was the guidance in the wilderness? Where was the light in the darkness? My experiences and what I thought the scriptures promised were at odds with each other, and I was caught in the middle. I was completely out of words. And I wish that I would have known that that is okay. In fact, I wish I'd known it was more than okay. These feelings aren't just a single psalm. This is the story of God's people generation after generation. We find the story of God's people crying out, bearing their souls, lamenting injustice and oppression and persecution. You know what amazes me? That description of crying out for injustice and oppression and persecution. That phrase could be talking about the book of Exodus or Jeremiah. It could be talking about the Gospel of Mark. It could be talking about the 1700s, the 1950s, or even today. God's people cry out. Because to be God's people does not mean we will live lives free from difficulty. To be God's people does not mean we will live lives free of the harsh realities of when people misuse and abuse their power and free will. God has heard humanity cry out. And God has cried along with us. God is with us. But sometimes our hurt is so strong, our sadness so deep, and our anger so potent that we can't see God's light. We cannot hear God's loving reassurance as it's spoken. And we cannot feel God's presence even as God sits alongside us. Now, this isn't to say that God's grace isn't strong enough to overcome our problems. It is, but grace has to be received. God can give it and give it and give it, but grace needs to be received. We have to open ourselves to it, and sometimes we're just not there yet. So God does what we do. God waits. God waits for us. Hear that promise. God waits for us. God doesn't give up. Now, this is easy to talk about when we aren't in one of those moments, but it's often impossible to remember when we're in the midst of that depth. So what are we to do when we find ourselves in the midst of despair, being tossed by the cruel waves of life's ocean, surrounded by those depths, or if we find ourselves at the top of the mountain screaming ourselves hoarse? What are we to do? We give ourselves permission. It's okay. It's human. What do? We experience the fullness of our feelings and emotions, because if we don't, they will just get heavier and more opaque, closing us off further from the world. What do? We seek companionship. Because whether an angry psalmist or a friend to cry with us, we need to be validated. We need someone who can say, it's okay to feel this way. and I'm going to be here. And then we do the hardest part. We do the same thing that God will never cease to do for us. We wait. Amen.